So, I think I'm weird in numerous ways. One of them is that I always want to feel like I'm doing something. I don't know that I always am doing something. I'm not always productive, but I want to always feel like I'm being productive. And so, leading up to a holiday, 30 days before, I'll always have something that I'm learning. You know, leading up to Hanukkah, I'm going to have some Hanukkah book or two that I'm planning on looking at when I have the free time or maybe in a set time. If you want to learn about holidays, and you want to do it 30 days before, it's not so easy when you're Jewish because you know, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot all sort of fall out at the same time, and so prepping that is not easy. But otherwise, you could spend a lot of your time. You know, 30 days up to Hanukkah, and then Hanukkah, there's a little bit of break, but then you've got Tu B'Shvat and Shvat and Purim, and then Pesach jump in, and then you've got Sfira and Shavuos, and all of a sudden you're into the 3 weeks. And so I'm always basically thinking about the next holiday. But, you know, we're in the month of Cheshvan, Mar Cheshvan, we call it a bitter month because there's no holiday in Cheshvan. And there's not even a 30 days before holiday until the very end of Cheshvan, because Hanukkah is not till the end of Kislev. So during this time period, I like to spend that sort of extra time that I have or that I don't have that I like to think I have thinking about tefillah. And so since this is the time period that we're in, that I'm learning with you for the next 3 weeks or so, I thought we could look at Rav Volbe's approach to tefillah. And so I know that you guys were learning the second chalek with Rabbi Brand, but we're going to jump back into the smaller first chalek, if you will. And he has what he calls a mevo katzar l'tefillah, a small introduction to tefillah. And with that, we'll jump in. I hope there are enough sheets. I don't know. If so, I apologize. But we're on page 23 in Alish and Rav Volbe. So Rav Volbe looks at a Gemara in Bava Kamma that effectively tells us that one of the Avos Nezikin, a Maveh, is actually referring to people davening. And a person in their essence may also be the reason why destruction takes place in the context of in Bava Kamma in discussing damages. But he also says that a Maveh is a person who davens. And Rav Volbe is going to get into that the essence of an individual is davening. And so in the third line here, after the word HaMispalo, we say, Zuhi Hagdaras Adam, Shehu HaMispalo, Ki HaTfila Hi HaPu'ula HaMisameles Es Adam Yosur Mikola Pu'ula Acheres. Davening is what makes a person. And Rav Volbe explains that Pulos Kol Melchama Uvinyon Batim V'Afilu Chaim Chavratim Misudarim. What are other things that living beings do, that living things do? They'll get together, you know, even animals will join into a pack. They'll build things, you know, beavers will build dams, and people will build buildings, and they'll come together, they'll build synagogues. People do a lot of things, but what distinguishes a person from other living beings? It's davening. It's tefillah. And so you'll say, are we sure that's the only thing? And he says, yes. We're seeing that a few of these other things exist in tefillah, but if anyone's familiar, the Kuzari talks about four levels of creation. At the bottom level, you have what's called a domim. A domim means it does nothing, it's silent, which we think about as being rocks and inanimate objects. I was going to say this table, although it might be level two. Level two is a tzomeach, a plant of some kind. And so trees, I mean, we know that trees and plants are living things, just different kinds of living things than what we're familiar with. And then the next level, the third level, we have a chaya, we have animals. And animals, without question, everyone knows, are living things. Many of them, I heard about a dog's first birthday this past weekend that was very elaborate, and the dog went to start licking the cake, and the dog got yelled at and had to go away. They were singing. Very elaborate. And we know that dogs are very much alive, and we know that they're not necessarily humans, but we know that they're very much alive. Animals are very much alive. Animals feel pain. They're halakhos about not putting an animal in too much pain, and even when we're using the animal for our own good, how to do it in the most appropriate and most compassionate way. And then the third level, fourth level that the Kuzari addresses of creation would be mankind. But how does the Kuzari describe mankind? As a medaber. Not person who walks around on two legs, not a builder, not the master of all, as a medaber, someone who speaks. And so Rav Volbe's telling us, really from the Gemara, that when we daven, we're channeling that which makes us most human, most distinct from the rest of the world, that we're using our power of speech. And not just that we're using our power of speech, but he says at the end of the second to last line, Aval lihis romim el bore umahava koha ulamos lo dabre elav panim el panim balashon ata zuhi nachlas adam. You're not just talking, because we talk about a lot of things, but you're not just talking. You're talking in the highest possible. You're talking to the Creator of the entire world. You're talking to God. So we're already at the pinnacle of creation, and the time that we're spending davening is the pinnacle of the pinnacle. At the very, very top of a tower, when this little pointy thing, it's called a spire, which I learned at the architecture tour a few weeks ago. We're at the tippy top of the spire, the very, very highest point, where our speech is not just lifting us up over all other creations, but lifting us up of all other speakers, because there's no greater speech than speaking to God. And here he says, he points out that we're talking to God in the language of Ata. Rabbi Meir Tversky, who's the grandson of Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, who's a Rosh Hashiva in YU, who is a walking Musar Sefer, just everything and anything he does is astounding and very powerful. And he says that the most significant and the most remarkable word in all of davening is Ata. Not any of the descriptions of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but that I'm talking to you. I'm talking to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, face to face. I mean, even if you see a good yeshiva bracha, when they talk to the Rebbeim, that they say, you know, does Rebbe want this? Or what does Rebbe think about this? It's always in the third person. It's a sign of respect. Will you talk to someone about them in the third person? Because I can't interact with you, because I'm not on that level. But when we talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sometimes we're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but a lot of times we're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ata. That's extraordinary. And that's what's happening when we're davening. And then Rovik brings us to the Gemara and Shabbos. Gemara and Shabbos, many of us are likely familiar, that there's a whole list of the things that are highly significant, and then Talmud Torah is Keneged Kulam. And Talmud Torah is significant, is equal to many of the other things that are going on, such as Hakanasas Orochim, welcoming guests, it's a pretty big deal. Hakanasas Kala, helping someone get married, not a huge deal. Levayas Hameis, which we recently experienced, burying someone, we call it Chesed Chalemes. And many of the things that the Mishnah is contrasting, we've got all these things which are sort of counterintuitive. You know, you feel good about this yourself when you help someone get married, when you bury someone. You know that that's something of value and of worth. And then it says, and all of these things in contrast to Talmud Torah, which might not always be so fun, might not always feel like you're really doing something so important, we say all of those things are equivalent to Talmud Torah. So understanding that Mishnah is a topic for another time, but Rav Volbe points out that it's something funny, because in all the lists that we have, one of them doesn't seem to fit so well. One of them is Iyun Tefillah, of understanding and looking into Tefillah, which I can appreciate everything else on the list, but why is that so substantial, so important? And he says that Iyun Tefillah is actually, I'm not going to read inside as much since we're deficient in sheets, but he says Iyun Tefillah is actually a type of Gemilas Chasadim. He says it's a chesed to yourself, because our innately we want to be davening, our souls want to daven. Rav Cook says so beautifully in his introduction, it's really Rav Tzvi Yehuda quoting his father, in his introduction to his siddur, says that our souls are always davening. Our souls are constantly talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the whispering. And only when we're centered, when we're in a place where we're not distracted by anything else, where we're focused on our tefillah, do we sort of let that whisper of our souls come out. Like only then can you hear it. And so what the chesed innate in Iyun Tefillah, and understanding your tefillah, of getting into your tefillah. And it's not just understanding the words, which he talks about on the next page, but it's enveloping yourself and being ma'ayin to get into it, really, to see the depth of your own tefillah. That's one of the greatest chesed you can do, but it's a chesed for yourself, as opposed to a chesed that's external. And he says, I will jump in line 10, everyone can feel this. Everyone can appreciate it. Rov hipatchuto shel adam beruchnius keshur betfila. And he says the vast majority of a person's openness to spirituality actually comes from davening. And now, I'll tell you that, and you'll look at me and say, well, hold on, I feel very spiritual when I'm doing X, I'm doing Y, and maybe davening's not really the place where I'm going to connect. And you'll tell me the only time you really connect, which is something we discussed actually last year, is like when I'm in like one of these beautiful Kabbalah Shabbases and everyone's singing, but when I'm just in a regular davening, that's not where I'm connecting. So Revolbi says, and I heard this is a parable that's adapted from Revolbi by Rabbi Tani Cohen of Bergenfield and of MTA. He said, imagine you're in a business meeting, you're on some sort of a board, and you're trying to get something done. So, in fact, nowadays, we've been talking about board meetings in the Kollel to try and make them as efficient as possible. And it's a thing that board meetings are like 20 minutes, 15 minutes. Sometimes they'll do them standing so that everyone is really focused and no one's dilly-dallying. But like the days of 45 to hour-long minutes, that's not happening anymore. People are not into them. They want quick, efficient meetings. But you know what actually accomplish? What are you accomplishing during the meeting, during 15 minutes? What can you do? The idea being that everyone does their work. Everyone prepares beforehand. They come with a very, very clear record of what they've accomplished, what they still need to accomplish. Everyone collaborates. And then they go out and they do their work and come back again, and everyone's just checking in. But the whole point of the meeting is not just the point of the meeting is not just to make sure everyone gets their work done when they're supposed to, and now you have to sort of show your work. But the point of the meeting is that if we're on a committee, we're planning an event, then there's a lot of considerations involved in the event. And part of the event is worrying about location, and part of it is worrying about advertising, part of it is worrying about the content, and part of it is worrying about paying for it. And all these different people might be worrying about different things. And so I might come and I have all these wonderful ideas about the program we should run, but the person says, well, our space doesn't fit that. And the other person says, well, that's a lot of programming for the amount of money. That happens a lot with us. And so the check-in is a sharing where I'm at, but it's also checking in what's feasible, what am I capable of doing, where do I want to be going, and do we want to sort of change our direction. And Revolbi says, if you think about davening is a little bit like a meeting that we have with God every day, three times a day, because we're going about our things, we're going about our spiritual lives, and we've got the projects that we're working on, the things we're doing, and whether they're spiritually motivated or they're holy things, but they're not necessarily spiritually motivated. We're motivated by whatever's going on. And we check in with the Kodesh Baruch Hu in our tefillah, and we say, is this really where I want to be? Is this the direction I want to be on? And it's a chance to reframe ourselves. And so this happens with Rabbi Brand a lot, but it starts happening to me, which is fascinating, that I'll be on the phone with Rabbi Brand, and maybe I'll talk to him between 9:05 and 9:14 on a Monday morning, and then he'll say, okay, I have to go do Power Torah. We'll hang up the phone. He'll share a beautiful Torah with you, and then at 9:46, he'll call me again, and we'll just pick up exactly where we were. And it's just a continuation of the conversation. But those are actually my favorite conversations, because in that half hour, I can like think about everything that we discussed beforehand, and I can reprocess and check back in, and it's most effective, as opposed to trying to have a conversation that's 20 minutes long, and then you're done, and that's the full conversation. So when we think about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, when we think about davening, I don't always approach it. We don't always think about it as this is a long-lasting conversation I'm having with God. It takes a break, and we say Aleinu finishes our davening, and then we go on to the rest of our day until the next time that we daven. But do we think about the fact that when we're davening, we're saying Atah, we're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Last night we got delayed. There was a little bit of running around in the airport from the stopover, and so we got back very late at night, and I was too late to daven Maariv, and so I don't know how frequently people experience this. This might be more of a people who always daven Maariv thing, but I'm sure there are some of us who do, where I couldn't go to Minyan, and so Maariv was in my living room, and it was one of those just like rote, I know a lot of it by heart, and so I wasn't really looking at the Seder, I was just kind of going and eagerly awaiting when I could be in my bed, and I had looked up this stuff, I was like planning on sharing this with you, and so in the middle of davening, I was like, oh, I should probably stop and think about the fact that I'm talking to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But when you take a second, you could literally take 5 seconds. You can count on your watch. Take 5 seconds before you start davening and say, I'm about to talk to God. I'm not just fulfilling an obligation. And I daven Maariv last night, not because I was excited to talk to my Creator, but because I had to daven Maariv last night. And so even though I was tired, I did, thank God. But it wasn't because I was so overwhelmed with the need to talk to my Creator. We don't always feel that way. Life is busy. But davening is that meeting. It's that check-in. And so if we take a few moments, the Mishnah Berurah talks about this. I want to look it up. I just didn't have a chance to. But the Mishnah Berurah talks about how when a person starts their Shemoneh Esrei, they're supposed to imagine. And I think a lot of us have probably heard this in one way, shape, or form. But this is in the Halakha book. This isn't just like a nice idea that that we learn when we're young. This is in Halakha. You take three steps back when you start Shemoneh Esrei. You're supposed to envision that you're walking out of the room that you're in. You take three steps forward, and you're walking into HaKadosh Baruch Hu's throne room, and that you're about to speak to the king. So how do you imagine walking into a throne room when you're not supposed to imagine what the king looks like? I can't tell you. But you're supposed to be walking into the throne room and that you're standing before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How often do we really think about that as we walk three steps forward, three steps back? It's like weird cha-cha dance that you often see people do. It's not so easy, but that's sort of the point, that we're supposed to take a step back, step away from where we are, and step in to where we want to be, so that we can say Ata to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we can really check in. Because in that way, we're activating the inside of our soul. Rav Volbe continues, and he says that he wants to give you a mashal. Imagine you're traveling on a train, and you sit down on the train, and you're in seat 36B, that doesn't change. Maybe you're on a plane, but you're sitting down on the train, and you look out the window. Looking out the window is nice. And so the train's up, is going, and you start out, you see the station, and the station goes by, and then you can see the countryside. And you have not moved at all. You are sitting totally stationary. And yet if you look out the window, it is constantly changing. If you look away for a minute, you might see something totally different. And Rav Volbe says, even though we feel like we're stationary, that I'm still sitting in seat 36B, our lives are changing around us. The world is rotating around us. We literally know that the earth is rotating around us, that around the sun. The earth is constantly in movement, and we're just kind of stationary on it, but everything's constantly in motion. And so even though I feel like I've moved, I don't feel like I've changed at all, the world around me has changed. And so when we check back into tefillah, we're looking at something totally different. And this is really an indication of a deeper relationship. You know, apparently a number of years ago in the Kolo, they were running students in the academy. Because I think if you were to ask many, 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 many high school educators what's the biggest challenge of working in high school Jewish education, they'll tell you davening. Davening's very hard. I think if you were to ask shul rabbis, they'd also tell you davening's very hard. And the primary thing that we do in shul, for better or worse, is we daven. Davening's hard. And so they were running davening programs for a long time, and then they realized that davening wasn't the problem. Davening, okay, maybe they know how to daven, maybe they don't know how to daven, but the problem was feeling like you're actually talking to someone, that you're doing something. And so the Kol started doing something instead of not running a davening program, but running an emunah program, running a program to understand who it is that we're talking to. So we're actually doing that in a couple weeks, which is why it's on my mind. But we're trying to set that foundation of recognizing who you're talking to. But oftentimes, it's hard to recognize who we're talking to. Because just like we might be on a train and everything's moving and changing around us, we don't always see that. We don't think about ourselves as being different, as the world is being different. And a lot of times in relationships, it happens also. That you'll have a relationship with someone, and you sort of made that first impression, whether it was a few months ago, a few years ago, decades ago even. And that first impression, that person that you met the first time around, that's who they stay. And they never, ever change. I saw this a lot this weekend. My dad was thinking about his father, and the impression that we have of our parents is sort of one thing, and then maybe as we get older and as they get older, that changes a little bit. Once the parents stop caring and start needing to be cared for, that relationship changes, and we see them and feel differently about them. And it also happens with children, and so a child will see their parents, and then they get older, and all of a sudden their parents are not. They're not as tall as they thought they were. They're not as big. They're not as knowledgeable as they thought they were. The first time a parent says, I don't know, might be shocking. And the first time my grandfather told me he didn't know something was astounding. I didn't know what to do because he knew everything. He really did know everything, but that was like one thing he didn't know. But sometimes also, there's supposed to be more of a transition. Your parents look at their kids and they see them as little children, even though they're like 20 or 25 or 30 and have like a life and a family and a job. But how do we think about a Kodesh Baruch Hu? Is the Kodesh Baruch Hu that we talk to in our tefillah the same Kodesh Baruch Hu that we were talking to in our tefillah 10 years ago? If we know that we're constantly in motion, that we're constantly moving, our spiritual lives are constantly in process, then our connection, our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu should also be in process. And as I think Rabbi Brand has done twice here, it doesn't always mean that it's going to go up. When Ravobi talks about Yemei Ha'ava and Yemei Ha'sina, days of love and days of hatred, of happiness, that there's an oscillation in our spiritual lives, a Kodesh Baruch Hu might feel farther away, distant, and not as warm or friendly as he did at some point in our lives. But that relationship should always be changing. And so as we're traveling along, as we're checking in that meeting, as we're moving along in that train, the Kodesh Baruch Hu that we're talking to shouldn't be the same one as it was. Even this morning, but even if it's not this morning, then last week, then last month, then last year, it develops, it changes. So there's actually a medrash that talks about this, that a person's supposed to daven, and we're in the parshios of the Avos now, and so we talk about how Avraham instituted Shacharis, and Yitzchak instituted Mincha, and Yaakov instituted Mariv. But the way the Medrash talks about it, it's that a person davens in the Tachlufei Hayom. Tachlufei Hayom means the flipping over, the movement of the day. Not in the movement of their day, not as I move through my day, but as the day moves sort of through me. That as I stay in my stationary train seat, and the world moves around me. And so when I'm seeing a totally different landscape, I'm checking with a Kodesh Baruch Hu about where I'm at and how things are going. Which, without question, is not something that comes easily. But when we think about the essence of who we are, that I, in my core, am someone who speaks, and the pinnacle of my speech is when I'm talking to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, then that's an extraordinary opportunity. And I think in general, Rav Volbe is very good at explaining to us how Torah mitzvot are opportunities, and not just obligations, not things for us to feel guilty or bad about, but that this is something that we can tap into. And so I just want to make sure I'm not missing anything that's Yarek V'al Yavor. I guess we'll give one more mashal. That Kuzari talks about how tefillah is, we daven 3 times a day and we eat 3 times a day. And, there are people who will skip a meal on a consistent basis, but most of us say, I have to eat breakfast. How can I not eat breakfast? Some people will skip breakfast every day, except on fast days, then they need to be eating breakfast. But, and they're like, they're a mess, come like 9 o'clock, like, I can't believe I didn't have breakfast. Like, you never eat breakfast. But, okay, today I need to. But we eat 3 times a day, and even though it might not necessarily, we might not feel that way innately, spiritually, our neshamos need to eat 3 times a day. They need to connect to their creator 3 times a day. We eat for sustenance, and our souls connect to a Kodesh Baruch Hu for sustenance. So you can imagine, if you have a weekly lunch date with somebody, a friend you've had for a long time, and every Monday at noon, you guys have lunch together. There will be times when that meeting is not always so, that lunch is not so exciting. That you'll get together and maybe you'll chat and you'll have a great time, you'll reminisce, so you'll plan, and you'll talk about what's going on, and it'll be a wonderful, engaging experience. And sometimes it actually won't be so great. You're off, or she's off, or things don't connect, or you have to run out early, she had to run out early, came late, it's not working out, maybe just the restaurant is a mess today, and so the food was terrible. But there are things about that weekly meeting that aren't always going to go well. But when you have a standing relationship with someone, you don't just abandon it because one time didn't go well. And if we think about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, we have that standing meeting 3 times a day, and a lot of times it doesn't always go well, that we'll rush through, we'll rush in, we'll rush out. We don't really connect, because the point of the lunch is not to eat lunch. The point of the lunch is not just that I need someone to sit across from me so I don't feel uncomfortable sitting in a restaurant, although I do know people who have done that. But my sister-in-law was telling me that she felt weird going to a certain restaurant, so she invited someone. Like, they kind of both had things to do, but they really wanted to be eating it, so they both ate and didn't really talk. Okay, but generally, when you're going out to eat with someone, it's not about the food, it's not about eating, it's that you want to connect. When we go to davening, we've got all these siddurim. There's a lot of words to say, And so we totally easily could just sort of eat our food and not connect. We could just say the words and not connect. We could daven. It's like an astounding thing when Israelis meet Americans who can daven faster than them. They like can't get sentences out in Hebrew, but they will get through Ashrei faster than you could ever imagine. Israelis are like astounded because sometimes we'll have people who approach davening as, I just got to get this meal done. I got to get this done so I can move on to the next thing. And connecting to what we said at first, if we remember that we're talking to Atah, that we're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the goal is not the meal. The goal is not to get through the words. The goal is to feel that connection, to foster that connection, to feel comfortable in that connection. And sometimes I don't feel like I need to be davening this week or next month. But when you have that standing meeting for months or years at a time, and then one day you really, really need to talk because you've got something going on, or you really need the person for something, you've had a standing lunch date for 4 years, to ask for a favor, to tell them when you need them, it's not uncomfortable because there's a relationship there. When we talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and we're recognizing the Atah in there, then there's a relationship, and I feel like I can connect to it. And so, God willing, we're gonna continue with the next page of Revolvi next week. God willing, I'll have more copies. I'm with you guys for another 2 weeks, and then Rabbi Brand will be back. But thank you very much for learning together. Thank you for the Elias Neshama for my grandfather, and I'll see you next week.